Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, connecting for the light. This is a heavy week for me as far as material that I've collected. I have got the bonus of Archangel Michael's monthly message to Rona Herman, which are always first class, so that's something to look forward to. I have, as usual, Sheldon Nidal's weekly report on behalf of the Spiritual Hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. So, I will start with that message. And it reads that we come again bringing more information about your world and the current status of first contact. Our Earth allies are on the very brink of being able to put into effect their plans for global transformation. A series of coordinated maneuvers in the past few weeks have finally got the last dark cabal on the run, which is making possible the long-promised deliveries of the prosperity programs to their most anxious recipients. This aspect of the grand plan is only able to happen because those working for the ouster of the present US administration are very close to achieving this objective. Likewise, the announcements of global debt annulment and a range of new international banking laws are ready to roll at the moment's notice. All this is kept under wraps by mainstream media, focusing instead on America's steadily worsening Iraqi affray. For us, the vital hardcore news is the covert endgame between the old guard of Illuminati rulers and those intending to reshape your world's present collapsing reality. The significance behind this chess game is that your world is to be completely transfigured, which is why your rulers are intent on keeping your attention directed towards the war in the Middle East. This dastardly production is being used as a smokescreen to disguise the all-out confrontation raging between the Dark Cabal and their rivals, our Earth allies. During the course of this conflict, a great deal of masquerading by both sides was undertaken to achieve their goals. These strategies allowed our Earth allies to develop a broad game plan, which is at last bringing this hapless cabal to its knees. But inevitably, a few minor points remain outstanding. These are now being resolved, and we expect some major developments to happen shortly. We retain our role of official watchdog and intelligence advisor to our Earth allies on a spectrum of matters, ranging from the reformation of the global banking system to the most effective way to conduct the removal of many recalcitrant regimes around the world. We have also been permitted to draw up a detailed program for rectifying your multitude of global environmental crises. Reforming planetary society with the complexity of laws is no easy matter. Our Earth allies have gone through some different and difficult initiations since the Anunnaki, your former overlords, came over to the side of the light in the mid-1990s. Today, the allies constitute a hodgepodge of individuals and groups that were at first very much at odds with each other. Later on, in the early years of this century, they increasingly join forces until they now work surprisingly well together. They have forged an exhaustively detailed plan for bringing about a wholly new world, and 90% of these plans are already agreed upon. The remaining 10% is dependent upon the uprooting of the American regime. Over the past 5 years, this illicit regime squeezed the global money flow until it is now very difficult to conduct business internationally. This angered many who formerly approved of the self-serving ways of the Dark Cabal, and led to a spate of new rules and regulations being drafted and put into place for quick enactment. What is happening now is the final manoeuvring into position by a secret global coalition intent on legally expulsing the present US regime. As you can imagine, and image, this is a complex undertaking that began in the post-World War II era. The growing arrogance of various corporate and allied wealthy individuals forged an interwoven global complex whose goal was to dismantle the legal constructs that hold this democratic republic together. This was clearly perceived by early members of the secret coalition who had long worked in government and saw at first hand what was going on around them. This strengthening power grab by a rich and corporate America reached its first pinnacle in the 1960s, reaching new heights in the 1980s and 1990s. By this time, a number of ongoing court cases brought by this pro-democratic coalition were challenging what had become a dictatorial oligarchy intent on creating a corporate-based, non-democratic American empire. The epitome of this is the present U.S. regime. The dark cabal set up the present U.S. administration to complete a process begun in the closing days of World War II. But a growing body of patriotic and disgruntled government employees and assorted allies clearly understood what worse was covertly being done to hijack the American Republic. The focus of this underground group was on legally remedying these abuses and returning the fiscal resources pilfered by the dark. They also saw that both political parties were becoming puppets for the empire-building programs of the dark. The opposing sides finally engaged in an all-out clash in the late 1990s, the highlight of which was the stolen election of 2000. With this contemptible act, it became clear that the needed reforms were not going to be enacted by the now degenerated U.S. political system. Equally clear was the need for creating an effective alternative to the system and putting it into power. The upshot is the present bunch of policies advocated by our Earth allies. This means that the imminent economic, political and governmental changes are the countermeasures to a vast covert coup that has successfully hijacked the US government and converted it into the chief agent for planting your entire global society in a vice of slavery. This was to have been extant by the late 1990s, had it not been for the Anunnaki's change in size. We emphasised this repeatedly to establish a central point. The reverberating changes in this galaxy's politics are being mirrored by events happening local on the world. This is why our original first contact mission took on a new meaning of scope, and why Heaven drastically revised the early 1990s timetable. First contact morphed from the more usual swift paradigm shift into a more involved and gradual process in which your spiritual awakening was externally represented in remaking of your political, cultural, and economic environments. The recasting of your reality includes a gentle increasing exposure to our benign presence. This variegated operation has already provided a substantial escalation in sightings over the past 5 years and, to a lesser extent, in the increase of interaction between our crews and yourselves. Our intent is to make you aware that we are here and that we are set on completing this first mission in as reasonable a time frame as is divinely given us. Bear in mind that this mutual first contact learning curve applies to you as much as it does to us. You too have much to learn about our reality and how we live, work and play. From this perspective, you can see that a lot must be fitted in to a rapidly decreasing amount of time. These time constraints put considerable pressure upon our Earth allies to get their part done and then let us do the rest. Our part in all this is to set up our crews with the most efficacious approach for carrying out the mass landing procedure. All indices so far point to doing it in one fell swoop. From experience, we have discovered that a piecemeal approach simply isn't going to work on your planet. Recent experimental attempts in various isolated areas with the less inculcated peoples still stirred up overstimulation and considerable resistance. Based on this, we now intend to stick with an intervention en masse at the divinely appointed time. This will also ensure that all goes as planned. But prior to this, you'll need a series of awareness-raising broadcasts in order to remove, to the extent that we require, the deep-seated xenophobia ingrained in you since childhood. Happily, the time for all this is drawing nigh. And the message concludes, today we continued our discussion about the coming changes and how these relate to the first mission. We feel it is important that you grasp what a monumental operation this is turning out to be. But whatever the challenges, we can and will succeed in this divinely prescribed mission. And that is it. Possibly not quite such a dramatic message as some we've had of recent time, but it's interesting that they are now confirming that they are back to the plan that allows for landing en masse. I have to say, that does seem to be the best approach. I'm moving on straight away to the general news. It's got a few items here. One that came out from a source which wasn't named came to me via email from a friend, so I can only tell you the content rather than where it came from. But there was a heading on it called Synthora, dating to February 17th. And it was reading as follows. In the last 6 months, we've made enormous advances in understanding the unwholesome hold that scientists have over the American government. And I'm optimistic that the truth will come out. And it reads in brackets, 6 months from now, people behind the curve are going to look quite silly. Just recently, those who were brave enough to point out the massive influence of the lobby weren't just considered to be mistaken or even crazy. This issue is literally unspeakable, at least in a polite society. Zionism was the hate that dare not speak its name. The Zionists don't yet realize that they lost the battle, and the war once these issues became debatable. Goes on to say that the United States is currently under a Zionist occupation government. And the writer, whose name I haven't got, says, still don't believe me? This past week, the Democrats started to exercise their newly acquired power with a hearing of the Middle East Subcommittee of the House Foreign Affairs Committee on the next steps in the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. Do you think they invited Jimmy Carter, Bishop Tutu, Nelson Mandela? A neutral expert on the Middle East, a Palestinian? Nope. The three invitees, the only three invitees, were Daniel Pipes, who it is claimed was forced on the committee as witness by the Republicans, Martin Indyk, and David McCoskey. And the extract I've got concludes by pointing out the following, that McCoskey works for the ultra-Zionists at WNAP, which is the lobby's think tank. Indyk, the original founder of WNAP and a former research director at APAC, is the director of the Saban Center for the Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution. Saban is the Israeli who is the biggest donor to the Democrats and thus the leading member of the Jewish Billionaires Club. Now, the writer says, I really don't need to describe Daniel brown-skinned people's cooking strange foods and maintaining different standards of hygiene types. Indyk came across as a moderate but non-committal. McCoskey has a complete hard ass, and Pipes is absolutely over the top, insane. I imagine the three of them arriving here arm in arm, deftly performing Jewish folk dances, singing Hara Nagela, waving the Israeli flag, and sporting their medals from Israeli to service to Zionist colonialism. The guys like these have debated that the Palestinians consist of discussion of the appropriate caliber of ammunition to use to shoot Palestinian children in the face. Is it not unreasonable to wonder why all the witnesses are on one side of the issue and for similar shenanigans more of a diet plan from the same bunch of politicians? Is Congress just the new Knesset? That's all I have in that extract. Unfortunately, if it appears of interest, you can't follow that up on the web because I don't have the web website address from which it came. I have one here which is a report, an article by Saoirse Fahle, and it was actually reported to her by Western subscribers. Now, it comes off a site called whatdoesitmean.com, and Saoirse Fahle has written as follows, that Kremlin resources are reporting today, and that was February the 20th, that President Putin has ordered Russian military forces to prepare for war against the United States in an apparent show of force to back up his words at the Munich Security Conference, and where he staged against the Americans. It is a world in which there is one master, one sovereign, and at the end of the day, this is a pernicious state, not only for all those within the system, but also for the sovereign itself, because it destroyed itself from within. Putin's reference to the United States destroying itself from within also appears to come into fruition, as the American war leaders have removed the last obstacles from their president being able to declare martial law against his own citizens. And as we can read, as reported by the International Herald Tribune News Service, and which says, a disturbing recent phenomenon in Washington is that laws that strike to the heart of American democracy have been passed in the dead of night. So it was for the provision quietly tucked into the enormous defense budget bill at the Bush administration's behest that makes it easier for a president to override global control of law enforcement and declare martial law. The provision signed into law in October weakens two obscure but important bulwarks of liberty. One is the doctrine that bars military forces, including the Federalized National Guard, from engaging in law enforcement. Called posse comitatus, it was enshrined in the law after the Civil War to preserve the line between civil government and the military. The other is the Insurrection Act of 1807, which provides the major exemptions to posse comitatus. It essentially limits the president's use of the military in law enforcement and putting down lawlessness. The newly enacted provisions upset this careful balance. They shift the force and focus from making sure that federal laws are enforced to restore public order. Beyond cases of actual insurrection, the president may now use military troops as a domestic police force in response to a natural disaster, a disease outbreak, terrorist attack, or to any other condition. The report goes on to say that changes of this magnitude should be made only after a thorough public airing, but these new presidential powers were slipped into the law without hearings or public debate. The president made no mention of the changes when he signed the measure, and neither the White House nor Congress consulted in advance with the country's governors. The troubling news coming from America also comes at a time when that nation is reporting that the inmate numbers of their newly opened concentration camps have reached 26,500 detainees, many of whom are entire families. These new American concentration camps are almost eerily reminiscent of those of the former German Nazi regime, and which, like the American war leaders of today, are stating to their citizens that these camps are only for foreigners. There you are, if that all be true, and who would doubt it? That's a very ominous development. And speaking personally, that's the first time I've actually heard that these camps they built for imprisoned people have actually been active to the point of containing so many thousands of people. Now, I've got a very short extract here about the drugs company Merck & Co. I can't actually see where it originated from, but it's saying that they are bowing to pressure from parents and medical groups to immediately suspend its lobbying campaign to persuade state legislatures to mandate that adolescent girls get the company's new vaccine against cervical cancer as a requirement for school attendance. Now, that was a short extract I made the report that came out on the 20th of February. And on the 21st, came a follow-up in a manner of speaking. This came out of Austin, Texas. And it was talking of Governor Rick Perry's chief of staff, who met with key aides about a new vaccine, of course, the one I just mentioned, on the same day as its manufacturer donated money to his campaign. And it said the documents were obtained by the Associated Press show. There we are. As one often suspects, the usual collusion of money and favours supplied to try and get these drugs into being. 9/11 never goes away. I'm sure there's something nearly every week about it. It's something a little bit different than I've never heard of or read before. And that came out on, yesterday in fact. It's just a short note that I've got here which refers to what the World Trade Center building designers said before and after 9/11. And I quote, a three-page white paper dated February 3rd, 1964 described its findings as follows. The buildings have been investigated and found to be safe in an assumed collision with a large jet airliner, and it quotes here, Boeing 707 or DC-8, travelling at 600 miles per hour. Analysis indicates that such collision would result in only local damage, which could not cause collapse or substantial damage to the building and would not endanger the lives and safety of occupants not in the immediate area of impact. So that's another little interesting point there. That makes the collapse of the building and all the claims that the internal fire melted the structures and other such points sound very weak indeed. Another very short extract I've got here. Fabulous, I don't, often don't know where they come from, but this is talking about, it's a report from Washington, saying that the Senate gridlocked on the Iraq war in a sharply worded showdown Saturday as Republicans foiled a Democratic bid to repudiate President Bush's deployment of 21,500 additional combat troops. I'm not sure. I thought I heard on the one of the TV channels in the UK that they had actually started going, so that's interesting. Perhaps you hear one story in the States and sometimes we hear a little bit more about it. Now, having read the article about President Putin, there's yet another one that's come out regarding 9/11, and this was written by Kevin Barrett on the 17th of this month, and his website is mujcar.com, that's spelled M-U-J-C-A, and he was asking the question, was Osama bin Laden responsible for 9/11? The Bush administration says yes, citing a grainy, badly edited videotape that surfaced in December 2001. In that tape, a fat guy who vaguely resembles Bin Laden chortles about the success of the 9/11 attacks. In earlier interviews, Bin Laden had denied responsibility for 9/11, once even deploring the loss of civilian life in the attacks and calling them un-Islamic. In the famous confession video, despite Bush's insistence that the tape is authentic, America's top academic Bin Laden expert has finally gone on record joining numerous other experts. And he said, it's bogus, says Professor Bruce Lawrence, head of Duke's University Religious Studies Program. Lawrence, author of Messages to the World, The Statements of Osama, Bin Laden offered his historic debunking of the administration's lie in an interview with Kevin Barron. I think that interview was called Dynamic Duo, if I read that right. Anyway, the interview marked Lawrence's first major public statement since he made headlines last year by suggesting that recent Osama tapes are hoaxes and that the real Osama, Bin Laden, may be dead. By telling us that this preposterously bad hoax is genuine, talking about possession video, he cites informants in US intelligence apparatus in Laden unit saying that everyone knows the tape is fake, adding that the hoax has been kept alive because it is politically useful to those who wish to deflect attention from the conspiracy theories about 9/11. Now it reads that if Professor Lawrence is right, then everyone with eyes can see that he is, simply by comparing the overweight imposter and the fact that Bin Laden bogus confession to other pictures of Osama Bin Laden, the Bush administration, by repeatedly citing the tape as authentic, is clearly guilty of obstruction of justice at best, high treason and conspiracy to mass murder at worst. Since the FBI now tells us that Osama Bin Laden is not wanted for 9/11 because there is no hard evidence connecting him to the 9/11 attacks, and since US intelligence personnel all know the confession tape is a Bush administration hoax, it should not be difficult to nail the perpetrators of this outrageous cover-up of the crime of the century. And he says, it is time for Congress, an appropriate judicial authority, to mount an investigation of the Fatih Bin Laden bogus confession video. And he says, where did this tape come from? So there we are. The whole report goes on somewhat longer, but I thought that was quite interesting that people are now questioning that tape. Have a bit of here, a bit of news here, which came from that very good news site, Rens.com. And the question was being asked, what would be the consequences of a US or Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear energy sites? And it says that the 2006 Kadana Global Peace Forum, Australian medical scientist Dr. Helen Caldicott provided an authoritative analysis by video of the devastating impact on human life that would result from radiation released from such an attack. Dr. Caldicott described the catastrophic deaths that would result from a conventional attack on nuclear facilities and the long-term increase in cancer deaths from the radiation release. Report reads that should the attack be made with nuclear weapons, for some of which is criminally insane, neoconservative advisors advocate, the populations of many countries would suffer for generations from radioactive particles in air, water and food change. Deaths would number in many millions. Such an attack justified in the name of American security and American hegemony would constitute the rawest form of evil the world has ever seen, far surpassing in evil the atrocities of the Nazi and communist regimes. Dr. Caldicott detailed the horrible long-term consequences for the Iraqi population from the US military's current use of depleted uranium, an explosive ammunition used in Iraq. Caldicott explained that depleted does not mean depleted of radiation. She explained that each time such ammunition is used, radioactive particles are released in the air and are absorbed into people's lungs. We are yet to see the horrific civilian casualty rate of the American invasion or the true casualty rate among US troops. Dr. Caldicott expressed bewilderment why the rest of the world does not stand up to the US and force a halt to its crimes against humanity. It reads, one man heard her, Vladimir Putin, President of Russia. On February the 10th, the 43rd Munich Security Conference, President Putin told the world's assembled political leaders that the US was trying to establish a unipolar world, which he defined as one single center of power, one single center of force, and one single master. Now, it is, of course, this report that relates to the early one that I was reading, but we have a little bit more information in this one. This goal, Putin said, was a formula for disaster. The United States, Putin said truthfully, has overstepped its borders in all spheres and has imposed itself on other states. The Russian leader declared, we see no kind of restraint, a hyper-inflated use of force. To avoid catastrophe, Putin said, consideration of the entire existing architecture of global security was necessary. Putin's words of truth fell on many deaf ears. U.S. Senator John McCain, America's most idiotic and dangerous leader after Bush and Cheney, equated Putin's legitimate criticism of the U.S. with the word confrontation. It mentions also that even the BBC's defense and security correspondent, Rob Watson, jumped on the American propaganda wagon, tagging Putin's speech the revival of the Cold War. The reception given to Putin's words made it clear to Russia, China, and every country not bribed, threatened, or purchased into participation in America's drive for world hegemony, that the US has no interest whatsoever in peace. Intelligent people realized that American claims to be a moral and democratic force are mere pretense behind which hides a policy of American military aggression. So there we are. That's all I'm going to read from that extract. Putin did in the same talk stress Russia's peaceful intentions and desire to focus on its economy and to avoid the arms race. So it's interesting. It's a funny little story, I think, connected with Russia, which has always stuck in my mind. The great American seer, Edgar Cayce, actually made a prediction that Russia would be effectively the means of bringing peace, that is, permanent peace, to the world. And it's interesting that in that interim time, I mean, Russia was at one stage possibly the biggest enemy of the world next to the Germans, if you are to believe the Cold War status between Russia and America. But having collapsed and now rebuilding themselves, would we dare think that they do truthfully have peaceful intentions? We have to hope they do. Now I'm coming to my UFO spot. I've got one item, and it's from these old Flying Saucer reviews, which are a real source of information, very interesting reports. This is from November, December 69, and it talks about a Pyrenean humanoid report. I'm still surprised when I read these old magazines at how many ET contact reports there are, because I come back to something I've mentioned before. The people who try to debunk UFOs always talk about the craft and more often than not carefully select the ones they want to debunk. But very little has been said, if at all, about the actual sightings and contacts. Short of, I suppose, George Adamski. This report talks about a witness who lived in the Pyrenees in France. He was an old soldier. And at the age of 71, when this report was written in 69, he was still alert and active in agricultural pursuits. He said that one day, about mid-morning in broad daylight, he was a witness of a sensational and mysterious happening on the departmental highway number 21, which runs from Tarbes to Castelnau Magnac. It happened in 1965, and apart from the inhabitants of the neighbouring village, the public has never heard of it until now. The statement was made to us by Monsieur Sinek as follows. I am no longer quite sure of the precise date, but I know it was after the straw had been cut. It was in the first half of July 1964. So I've been corrected there. I worked it out to 1965. Never mind. That morning at 10:30, I was near Maranats, about 150 metres beyond the spot where the road crosses from Galan. Looking along the road towards Saint-Tu, I was dumbfounded to see an extremely bright, shining machine lying athwart the road and the verge of the road. The sun was shining, the visibility was excellent, and I was amazed to see this strange, shining craft which looked like nothing known to me. You might have said it looked like a table, but I could not make out its precise shape because it was so dazzling bright. It is 250 metres from here to the bin, talking of the object. It was a car, possibly, or any other familiar object. You couldn't have been mistaken about it, even if you couldn't see all the precise details. From its position on the road, I should say it was about 10 feet long, and its height was about that of a passenger car, perhaps a little less, it seemed to me that it was not quite touching the ground. fact, there weren't any wheels, and I can't say whether or not there were any legs. At that point, it suddenly rose up and flew off towards Pugalia at great speed. Such a thing was totally unexpected, and my astonishment knew no bounds. I was still standing there looking at the place when I caught sight of two strange forms. They were little men, absolute dwarfs, which must have been hidden from my sight by the machine. As you can see, I myself am not very tall. Well, they were a lot smaller than me. Monsieur Sinac stretched out his hand and indicated their height. He measured and found it was just over 3 foot. He said they were wearing a sort of clothing that I could not see very well, but the colour of it was khaki, and of that I'm dead certain, for I know khaki all right. I have worn it often enough, I can tell it at a great distance, and in broad daylight, as far off as this, I can't be mistaken. Then I watched these two little beings walk along beside the hedge, about 90 feet or so in my direction. They went through a gap in the hedge and walked across the bracken towards the chestnut tree there. They seemed to be bent forwards with a load on their back, and I could see a sort of sack on the back of each of them, but could not make out the details. My curiosity was well and truly aroused, and I'd have liked to have been nearer to question them, and I couldn't leave my cows where they were on the verge of the road. So without losing a minute, I took the cows back to my place and then got on my bike and set off towards the chestnut tree. When I got there, I found traces of where the two dwarfs had been, and I found marks of trampling beneath the tree. He mimed a gesture to indicate not just their simple passage out that spot, but a trampling on the spot. I looked all around for any signs as to which way they had gone, but found nothing. Although it is true that it took me half an hour to put the cows in and come back here on my bike, there was only a very brief period in which I had not had the road under constant observation, and it seems to me that they cannot possibly have left the same way as they came. Then I went all around everywhere, at the spot where the thing had stood. I thought that I could make out marks of feet, but I'm not sure, can't swear to it. Monsieur Sinac is a grand old man with a very honest reputation, sincere and trustworthy. He has a fine military career behind him, and it would not be too easy to fool him. When we asked him if he had heard any noise when the object took off, he said he thought he heard something, but was not too sure about that, as he had a bullet through his left ear and could only be with the right one. And he said there was, at any rate, no smoke or flame or sparks as it took off. For those who know the area in question, they say that the local scene has changed quite a good deal since 64, and let's talk of how some of the hedges have disappeared, and also the big chestnut tree, etc., etc. So, thereby into report. Well, it's quite an interesting one. Perhaps not quite so unusual in light of many type of ET contacts that have been made in recent time. Now, I've got something like about 12, 13, 14 minutes to read some of my spiritual messages, which I like to fit in. I think that's an important part of the show. There's an extract I made from an email that was sent to me by a friend today. An article's come out written by Patricia Day and Dakota Robles called Time for Action. You can find that on the website, eraofpeace.org. And the little bit that I wanted to read out was something in the way of the prediction, because she said, "Our Father, Mother God have issued the divine fiat that 2007 is the year in which the cycles of destruction will come to an end. This year, a new paradigm of heaven and earth will be birthed in the hearts and minds of awakening humanity. These patterns of perfection will then be seeded into the crystal grid system of earth through the fifth dimensional solar light bodies of light workers around the world. Your I Am presence has magnetized this information into your sphere of awareness because you have been preparing for lifetimes to assist with this vitally important facet of Earth's ascension process." But there we are. You cannot but read into that prediction that peace will come to Earth and war will cease. And that, to my mind, has to follow the removal of the Bush administration, and will also mean that first contact then should have already taken place. So I sincerely hope that is true. It will be a marvellous year, 2007. Without further ado, I want to go on to Archangel Michael's message. I do love these ones, and through Rona Herman, although there are other sources, they seem to have a particular flavour. I say that because it is true to say, I think, that anyone who channels messages obviously uses their language to interpret what is coming through. And I do like the way that Rona Herman has come out. Now, this is Archangel Michael's message for February 2007. I haven't taken anything out of it because I'm going to read the number of pages here. It's quite a long message. Hopefully, I'll just fit this one in. It's headed Processing Your Macro Mind and Your Macrocosm Awareness. And it reads, Beloved Masters, are you ready to expand your vision beyond your private little world or microcosmic reality? Are you ready and willing to accept the truth that you affect everyone and everything in this universe to one degree or another, and that everyone on Earth and in every other realm also affects you? You are a microcosm or a miniature universe within the macrocosm which contains the totality of the omniversal experience. You have been described as a cell within the heart-mind of the Supreme Creator, and this is a valid description. As the Supreme Creator radiates more and more of the elixir of life throughout the omniverse, it is affecting all creation. You cannot hide from it, you cannot deny it. Your lifetime to your source is growing stronger. Sorry, not your lifetime, your lifeline to your source is growing stronger and more persuasive all the time. The magnetization factor is growing stronger and you are magnetizing to you, in stronger and stronger measures, that which you have claimed as your reality. If you believe that you must live in poverty and chaos, that will be reinforced and magnified in your life. If you have accepted the truth that you are entitled to a life of beauty, joy and prosperity, that reality will unfold before you. If you follow through and take the proper steps, as outlined in past messages. It is as if your lifeline has been tugged and pulled in different directions as spirit tries to get your attention. You can resist and hold back, kicking and screaming, but you will eventually move forward on the spiral of evolution. There will be no denying the evolutionary cycle that is now in full swing. The soul self is nudging and prodding everyone to one degree or another in an effort to get each soul's attention. No one can maintain the status quo, coasting and drifting and ignoring the call to awaken. You must either grow and ascend in consciousness or sink deeper into chaos and limitation, postponing the inevitable. We have often stated you are destined to return to a perfected state, so why not enjoy the journey? You can readily see where in the world the resistance is strongest. There is a very powerful thought form that has been building over the past 50 or so years. It is a thought form of annihilation, a desire within the minds of many souls to destroy all those who do not conform to certain cultural or religious teachings and rules. It is as if the last vestiges of the third and fourth dimensional dogmatic views are rising to the surface to be transmuted. It is a fight to the death for many, and it is based on fear. Fear of not being right, fear of the unknown, fear of change, and fear of losing control. Unfortunately, those who have these beliefs will draw to them those things they fear most. In the areas of the world where this is taking place, it is a microcosmic event. It is as if the areas of conflict are being isolated and cut off from the rest of the world and beyond, so that the surrounding countries and territories will not be contaminated. We'd have you know that we are using some of the beautiful unconditional love and light you, the light warriors, have been sending forth to place protective shields around areas where peace is the predominant thought form, so that contamination does not spread. As you expand your consciousness and begin to use your sacred mind or macro mind, your reality will change very quickly. This is what we have been explaining to you over these past few years as we endeavour to assist you in the perfecting of the Alpha Mastery Techniques. Micro Mind is your Beta Consciousness, whereas your Alpha Mastermind is your Macro Mind Consciousness, which helps your subconscious mind to become conscious as all the old subjective negative programming from the past is released and transmuted. and the conscious mind becomes receptive to the downloading of cosmic information from the higher realms of knowledge. Macro-awareness is the experience through the sacred mind and sacred heart centers. The three lower chakra energies are filtered through and overlighted by the sacred heart as they are gradually unified and work in harmony with the higher chakra system. The sacred macro-awareness is a unified combination of the left and right brain hemispheres and has the potential of accessing the higher levels of information stored within the light packets of wisdom located at the back of the brain from the medulla oblongata, where the ascension chakra center begins, to the crown. The secret, beloved, is to stay centered within the sacred heart as you expand your consciousness, and your radiance grows into greater and greater concentric circles of light around you, thereby expanding your sphere of influence. Staying centered in the heart is one of the most important rules in the process of reconnecting with your twin flame, or assessing the sacred love of unity consciousness. Learning the infinity breath techniques is also an integral part of the process. You see, as you practice the breath of infinity, the in-breath begins within your sacred heart center and moves it back up through the pranic chi, which is in front of your spinal column, and exits at the medulla oblongata at the back of the brain, curving over your head and entering at your sacred heart center once more. Allow this energy to find its path, whether it moves in or out of at the breastbone, the high heart, or the solar plexus center. Makes no difference. Whether it wishes to enter and exit is appropriate for you. Your breath knows the path to take. All you have to do is to focus on the exit and entry points as you breathe in and out. After entering the body at the sacred heart center, the outbreath moves down the pranic tube, again inside the body, in front of the spinal column, and exits through the root chakra, the perineum, that is the small area between the anus and the sexual organs. The breath continues its path in front of the body and enters once more at your sacred heart center. Many of you have been faithfully practicing this technique for some time now and are ready for the next step. You see, allowing the breath to exit at the medulla oblongata has facilitated the activation of the ascension chakra at the base of the skull, thereby initiating the process of opening the higher dimensional levels of the brain, which give access to the higher frequency levels of consciousness. Most of you reading these messages are ready for the next step, and many of you have already completed the process of opening the portal way at the back of the heart. This is the portal that gives you access to the celestial cities of light. And if you have been visiting the city of light in the higher dimensions in your area via your pyramid of light in the fifth dimension, your portal way at the back of the heart is already opening and functioning. When you first incarnated on planet Earth and gradually assumed the physical vessel, your column of light was as wide as your crown, that is the halo overhead, which symbolizes the crown of light that connects with your higher self and all the way back to your Mother, Father, God and Supreme Creator. This vibrant, life-giving energy radiated from the front and back of your heart chakra out into the world around you. Over time, after sinking into the density of the third, fourth dimensional environment and experiencing so much heartache, most of you have gradually built an etheric shield of protection over the heart, thereby diminishing the flow of love come light to and from you. There was an etheric membrane of light placed over the back portal of the heart, which was to remain intact until humanity was ready to begin the ascent back into the realms of light. That time is now. Unfortunately, my time is virtually now, so although I've got a little bit left to read in that message, I don't want to start breaking into another paragraph. So it's a shame that I quite thought I might have time to read all of that. But the program started a bit later than usual, so I think that's eaten up a bit of my time. However, next time we meet, that will be the first item in the messages that I will read. I hope you've enjoyed the material that I've selected for the program. And thank you for being with me. Thank you for your support. Can I just say as a final note that in my message today from Diane, who's from the constellation of Sirius, there's a very upbeat message, and it seems to firmly indicate what came out in the prediction that I read out, that certainly the big events will take place sometime during this year. And it's really difficult to see that the Bush administration will last two or many months. And for me personally, their removal is the key to everything else. So, I thank you again for being with me. I'll say God bless you all and hope you're with me for next week's programme. Thank you.